I'm Jen.
I'm Peter. And we are not going to be dealing with any trolling tonight.
No, I'm done with it, guys. Honestly, if you're not going to be nice, I'm just blocking you. I don't care. And you could just go and say how I blocked you. I don't really care. I'm done.
Well, they're looking for that.
This is annoying.
They're looking for that.
I know. Good. Go have fun with that, guys.
You know what I find so interesting? And here's an interesting thing that we're going to talk about. So Jen and I, when it comes to social media, basically we'll communicate on certain things that we'll be putting out. And 99 times out of 100, you know, we're not going to be, I guess what you would say, engaging the people in the chat. That's just not what we do. No. But you'll always notice who's in the chat, who's saying what they're saying and all that. So we put out a viral tweet the other day alluding to the fact that a lot of the problems that exist right now can be mitigated in some capacity, if not in a major capacity, by the chief executive. President Biden has the authority to do a lot of things that can actually help us.
We've talked about this a lot. This isn't like novel idea, people.
But most notably, canceling student debt, which would be a tremendous swoon to the economy. I mean, let's be honest. Steve,
you'll catch us.
You'll catch us a little bit later. We appreciate you checking
in,
brother.
It'll be there.
Please hit
It'll
the like button
there.
And share if you can. That would be very helpful for
us.
Yeah,
there's a ruckus going on in New York that we needed to basically call an emergency meeting today. That's 100%. Basically what this is. Yeah. We're having an emergency meeting with the
an Long intervention
Island
activists.
Yes, with the Long Island activists. There is a problem.
We're having a problem in New York. And so when we put out this viral tweet alluding to the fact that Biden could cancel student debt, could expand Medicare via medical emergency, as it's disclosed in the Social Security Act, and of course, decriminalize cannabis, just those three things alone would have a tremendous impact on electoral politics in the midterms. Everybody knows this. And so we put out the fact that, you know, he could do this. He simply chooses not to. And you could take with that what you like. You could say he's corrupt, which is probably true. You could say he doesn't care, which is also probably true. Bottom line, they are not doing anything. And so at the end of the day, anyone who tells progressives that, oh no, you have to fall in line. What are you falling in line for?
I know. Exactly? This is like, well, apparently Obama reared his head again for a change and was essentially, I don't watch this nonsense because it's just nonsense.
Hi, Lucas. Welcome to Generational Change.
But apparently Obama reared his head and was basically like, look, be happy for what you get. Suck it up, buttercup. You know what I mean?
That's what I tell the American people all the time. They have to be thankful for having very little.
You don't do
Instead,
Obama.
They might have nothing.
You can't do Obama.
Stop but like, telling me what I can and can't do. I can do whatever I want.
At least
I'm not wearing a mask. You know, I would never hear the end of that one.
Well, I just don't even like you trying to do the voice. But apparently that we should just, you know, you get what you get and you don't get upset is basically what he was saying. And this is coming from someone who had a super majority in Congress and couldn't even get a public option passed. So your opinions about how, you know, if we just keep supporting blue people, really don't hold a lot of water, Mr. President.
And so for the basically 5,000 likes and 1,000 retweets that we got on this, there were two things that I observed that I am sharing with Jen, that I'm sharing with you guys.
I love when I hear about things right at the same time.
Yes. More liberals took exception to the post than conservatives did.
Of course.
And we got trolled by the same people who just won't leave us alone and don't want to stop trying to engage us in their petty little spats on social media.
You mean the people yes, formerly known yes, as who they're not allowed to be known
yes,
as because
correct.
They're losers
well,
and
there's
grifters?
Them, there's these, it's like, guys, get a hobby already. We're not going to engage you. We have no time for this crap. And stop, and a couple of them in particular who are so thirsty for your attention.
I've told them a million times, I'm not on social media.
Yeah.
I'm not there. So I don't see it. But what's so interesting to me, and how can people in that position claim to be standing for something bigger? If I'm the enemy that you feel the need to be really putting your mental energy into, you people are on the wrong path, man. I mean, even if you hate me, I just don't see that I'm all that powerful.
No, and the window.
Aren't there more important people for you to like contend with?
Well, it's not just that. It's the fact that the sphere is so small, and there is this idea that what you're saying has so much gravitas, and that so much attention is being drawn to it, and it's really not. It's an echo chamber.
It's you know what's so interesting? It's that I really take up a lot of space in their mind, rent free.
Yeah,
I got to tell you guys that, and you know what? Kudos. because, you know, it's really hard for us to get attention given the, you know, suppression in the algorithm. So if you guys want to keep promoting me, by all means, that's great. It's so bizarre, though, to me. It's so weird. Like, that, how is it that I'm worthy of such ire from them? Like, aren't there other people?
Well, one of them thinks that you're a terrible person because you're a Democrat. There's that one. And then there's the other lead in, which I think that you're like a wanna. Yeah, but they also want to yell at you for think, oh, you're going to be like, you're a wannabe squad member. It's like, guys, come up with, I'm not a joiner.
That's
come up with better point. Material.
No, it's just, it's so interesting. There's people that don't know me at all. And they just want, they decided they didn't like me. And they're just trying to work backwards from their conclusion, well, which is fine. I don't care. But it's very unproductive.
If you want to say that Jen is a Katie Porter stan or a Nina Turner stan, now that would hold some weight and that would make sense.
Yeah.
But this idea that Jen
I have no interest in being part of a squad. I, you know what? It reminds me back when I was a freshman in college and I rushed for sorority and I made it. Yeah. I'm not a joiner, it turns out. And I made it to like the second round and they started reading what the rules were. And it was like, you have to live in the house. There was a curfew. There are no boys allowed upstairs. And as soon as I started hearing this, I'm like, yeah, bye-bye. And I got up and left. So my point is, I'm not a joiner. So I'm not somebody that wants to be in the squad. I'm not somebody that wants to be part of, I'm just trying to like, you know, be part of progress, man. I'm not in a group.
Yeah, for
I'm
real.
Always, actually, I'm the person who's usually excluded from groups. Usually, truth be told.
Yeah, like
there'll
to
be
kick
entire,
you all the time.
There'll be entire parties, you know, based on something that maybe was an idea that I had and I won't be invited.
So the point is,
guys, I'm not a
joiner. Just find something better to do.
Yeah, really.
Seriously. It's like, you got to be more productive with your time. It, you know, if you think that we're the enemy or you think that we're in the way, or you think because we're supporting, you know, look, there's going to be a great event on Wednesday night. It's going to be the alternative view. As I call it, there's a couple of names.
That will apparently be competing with our live stream.
Yes, but they go on at 7, we go on at 8, so we'll be cutting in on them. They won't be cutting
in
on us.
See, that's a clicky, groupy thing, and I'm not part of that. So, yeah, it's not my thing.
But there's going to be a slate of non-corporate candidates that will be on there that are running to try to change things, and you can't fault people for trying to make an impact. And that's not to say that the impact doesn't happen.
Who would have ever thought to host candidate slates of people to come on a show and talk about things as a group? Who would have ever thought to do such a thing? Not any of the people that are doing it now, but
we don't have the bandwidth. Lucas, no, we don't, because unfortunately
Green's too niche.
Green is not only too niche, but Green's absolutely ended all credibility that they had when they decided to sabotage Jesse Ventura from having a chance at being their nominee the last presidential election in favor of Howie Hawkins.
They're too purist to ever get anywhere. That's the truth. They're not willing to accept the fact that they are very niche. Even the name is niche. Even if you don't know what they are, people that are more, let's say, socially conservative, even though they might be very much for something like Everglades restoration, they're not going to want to hang out with a bunch of like, you know, tofu eating hippies, which is what is, that is sort of this mental image when you hear of the Green Party. And I'm just saying, like, from a brand perspective, I find it very limited.
That's why the name The Forward Party actually does work if you think
about
it.
Yeah, not from left, not right, but forward.
Yeah, that does work. And
yes.
And again, as long as it's non-corporate, that's really how you're going to draw enough people away. There are so many common sense reforms, but I got to tell you, this is very important. And we're both fans of Kyle Kulinski and his show. Secular Talk this evening had a segment where he talked about why the right is more effective at organizing than the left is. And it's very simple. The right has predominantly, when it comes to military, ex-military and police and ex-police, they're all on the right. They all get in line and they all know their mission and their rules and what they need to do. That to me, more than anything else, is the key ingredient to why they're successful. And then what Kyle alluded to is the fact that everybody on the left has a modicum of jealousy. That is the reason why people come after Jen.
I swear to you, people, if you saw a day in my life, you would so not be jealous.
But that's part of the reason why they do that.
It's bizarre.
It's like, we don't want you getting any attention. And
I don't really, except from them.
it can't be lost on, you know, whether or not what we do, they feel cuts into because they want to be the ones to it. It's like,
but they're not doing anything.
No, they're not. And again, if we're having an exclusive, let's say with Julian Assange's father, like they don't want that. They don't want us doing that. They feel like they have the exclusivity rights to that. It's again, either you're for the mission or you're not. That is really what it's about. It's all about the mission.
Very unproductive.
It is. And so we don't know if John Shipton may be running late, haven't seen anything in the way of email. So what we will do is discuss something that is very near and dear because it is Florida. It is focused on Florida. And we have the return of the bootlickers.
We have a bootlicker alert, guys. And this is a Florida. This is a Florida version. It's not really a story time. It's just, I just thought it was interesting to point out the three different maps. Lou, I love you, but I can't have you on me right now.
Oh, you don't want to bring Lou on?
No, not right this second. I'm trying to do like three other things.
All right. So here is our very important bootlickers of the week. It's two bootlickers. Florida State Senator Jennifer Bradley and State Senator Lawrence McClure. District 5 and District 58. I believe are in the same area in the Senate and in the House, 4 inches closer to kneecapping, rooftop solar.
Yeah.
Gee, I wonder why. So we're going to share with you guys what the big secret is here in the state of Florida and why this happens. Well, as it turns out, we have an energy monopoly here in the state of Florida. It is Florida Power and Light, which is owned by NextEra Energy. Now, if NextEra Energy sounds familiar, it should. NextEra Energy is the company that owns of the Keystone XL pipeline. So we have this very big, or was it the Dakota? I think it was Dakota Access Pipeline. Who the hell knows? Probably on all of them. But this is a huge problem. And so because NextEra Energy owns an energy monopoly here in the state of Florida, they lose money by people having freedom. Yes, that word freedom. Of choosing what energy source they want to use. In this case, solar panels. But they don't want that. They want you to continue to use fossil fuels. Jen?
These two particular people are literally on the payroll for NextEra Energy. So you've got Jennifer Bradley in the Senate, Lawrence McClure in the Florida House. There are corresponding bills. And essentially what they're trying to do is eliminate the metering. So where people get money back when they produce solar power. NextEra Energy doesn't like that. So that's what they're working against. These two people are, and it's not even, it's bizarre. It's not even a secret. Like yeah. He just got $10,000. She got $10,000 to her political committee. He got something like this.
And they're so cheap. They don't even require that much to get bought off. It's amazing.
But she wrote the legislation, but essentially it was written by her friends at NextEra Energy. And they're trying to take away one of the huge incentives that people have for doing rooftop solar, which is getting this, which is this metering, which means when you harvest enough energy that more than you need, you're able to actually sell it back to the power company. And it's one of the key things that makes rooftop solar very appealing. And so
especially for, large communities that have HOAs, co-ops, things like that, you buy it in bulk, you can save a lot of money and it's good for the environment. So as far as I can tell, it actually has a lot of merit, but
this Jennifer Bradley. Florida Power and Light lobbyists met with first-time state senator Jennifer Bradley, directly drafted the text of an anti-net metering bill and delivered it to her office. So literally our legislation is being written by NextEra Energy.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
What could go wrong, people? And these are the two people that are suckling at the teat the most, apparently. So pay attention.
And let's be fair. These are two North Florida GOPers. So they don't really give a damn what the hell's going to happen here in South Florida. It might as well be another state.
Well, but the truth is it doesn't matter. I mean, Debbie lives in South Florida and she takes money from NextEra Energy.
Of course.
So it just happens that this is state legislation. So it doesn't matter that they're Republicans from the north of the state. They're bootlickers.
Oh, they are. And again, always follow the money, ladies and gentlemen. That will always lead you to the most logical conclusion when it comes to the corruption within our system.
So when you want to know why we don't have more solar initiatives, it's because people like this that people are electing are working against us. They're actually working for NextEra, literally working for NextEra Energy to screw us.
And so in conclusion to what I was just mentioning before, we recognize, as Kyle recognizes, that the left really needs to get their act together, and people need to start getting more aggressive about cutting people out that are not part of the solution and part of the problem.
And you know what? One of the things you were talking about, how the right is better because they're like people that fall in line. I want to say this also about the left that I think is a total weakness. And I say this with the
all due respect,
with all due respect, they care more about their feelings. And they care more about, it's sort of like, I feel like I said, there's no crying in baseball. You know what I mean?
There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
I feel like the left tends to get caught up more with emotions and feelings, and they end up wanting band-aid solutions that make them feel better. And they're all about their feelings. And the right, one could argue, doesn't seem to feel about anything. So somewhere I would like to think there is a happy medium, but the left gets their panties in a bunch over something and that's it. And they write it off. And then that whole movement stops because so-and-so said such and such. And so now they can't be in our group. And that's how the left works. And the right doesn't work that way. So,
and so while we're at it, and since we do have some time, because it looks like John may be running late or may have to come on afterwards, we'll see what happens.
He's in Melbourne. It's Melbourne.
Melbourne.
They don't say born. They say Melbourne.
I'm in Melbourne.
Melbourne. It's like Melbourne. Melbourne, I'm telling you, Australia. It's like, it's more of a U sound than an O sound. But it actually is convenient if anybody wants to know East Coast with interviewing people in Australia. Our 8 o'clock time slot, it's like where he is, it's like 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock in the morning tomorrow. So it's kind of like talking to people in the future, which is kind of cool to me.
Absolutely. And so.
So I just thought this was very interesting. And you can read like what the different things are in terms of how it changes the.
So we want to share with you guys exactly what the Florida maps are going to look like, depending on what currently happens, what will happen, and what won't happen.
Yes. Well, this is okay. So on the left, what we have is we have the current district. Okay. We have 27 districts. That's the current map. Mm-hmm. There's 10 Republican, 7 Democrat. I mean, you could see what the breakdown
is. Basically, it means that there's 10 safe Republican seats. There's 7 safe Democratic seats, 3 that lean Democrat, 5 that lean Republican, and 2 that are completely in the middle.
And
basically
so
can go either way every election.
DeSantis's map, as you can see, changes the overall from to a 6-9 and puts more unknowns in the middle, which of course lean red, which
so 7 lean red, 2 lean blue, and 4 are independent, which when you think about it, it's actually not as egregious as I thought he was going to be, but it's still bad. I mean,
but
you know,
this,
we're not going
to be. And so this in response to DeSantis, you could see on the right is, you know what? It's better when we do it like this. I think I do.
The Senate proposal.
Right. This is the Senate proposal. Yeah. And you could see, obviously, from our perspective, it doesn't look like DeSantis is liking on Debbie and them too much because he's wanting to basically eliminate all the blue seats in our area, like a lot. So it's interesting.
Well, it looks like it would have, I guess, 3 of the blue seats would be down here. 2 of them would be in Orlando and 1 of them would be in Tampa. Man, he really, well.
Exactly.
Again, you know what, though? And this is going to be something we're going to talk about.
And that whole top is gone.
Yeah. And we're going to, well,
that's
our
a problem.
Seat. That's, yeah. Well, again, that's the part of Jacksonville that leans blue.
Yeah. You guys can see the top of the state, according to DeSantis, doesn't have any blue people there.
Mm-hmm. So the most likely scenario is going to favor the GOP. How much it favors them, who knows?
It's the 14th.
But this is. Date's wrong. This is a direct. Yeah, you messed up.
I messed up.
Jen really hates this holiday, this Hallmark holiday.
I'm not even addressing it. But anyway, yeah.
But this is very important to note because, again, anybody who is running, it's very hard, very difficult, I must say. No, Chris, I would not say that DeSantis's one is best. I would say that's the worst. But of course, that's our governor. But again.
And again, best and worst, according to what? Like, from my perspective, if my Democrat representative districted out because our district became red, that's not a loss for us.
No.
So it really just depends on what you're looking at. Like, it depends on who your representative is. Like, for us, it might as well be a Republican. It doesn't really matter. And actually, to eliminate power from our representative would actually have a huge overall benefit in the state and in the state party, even if the seat goes Republican. So from my perspective, I agree. I have no problem with the DeSantis map.
Yeah, there are other states.
Because the Democrats
Colorado, California, Idaho. I mean, again, Well, Michigan is the state that we reference because they have an organization called Ungerrymandered. And that is, to me, that's the one that we really need to focus on, because independent commissions drawing the district lines is really what should be done. But in lieu of what New York just did, that ends the discussion about whether the Democrats actually care about ending gerrymandering. No, they just don't like the fact that Republicans are much better at this game than they are. That's all this is about. Because they control, the Republicans control 32 state houses.
Yes, and by the way, that all happened very, very slowly and methodically over a very long period of time while Democrats were sitting there bitching about just one seat, the head seat, the president seat, and Republicans were working their way through every state party and taking over state legislatures and our
the
judge
amount,
benches.
And if I may, the fact that Hillary Clinton is still a topic of conversation in lieu of the fact that there now appears to be pretty hard evidence that her team was involved in basically ginning up the whole Russiagate story. I mean, I think everybody knew that that was the most likely
scenario.
Realize
we didn't know that.
But now they have actual evidence of it. So it's, and again, did they always have the evidence and they drag it out over time and eventually gets released at some point?
But why?
Yeah, that's most likely the case.
I'm more of a rip the bandaid off kind of person.
Well, that's what we need to do. We need to remove ourselves the shackles of Clintonism.
We need to remove Clinton.
That's a big part of it.
Give her the hook.
And it's not just her. It's Pelosi. It's Schumer. It's Wasserman Schultz. There are people in the party that continue to drag it down and will not allow it to, succeed.
Well, and this is the interesting cognitive dissonance that we found a lot campaigning, especially in Florida. The amount of people that we know personally that are decent people, that are good people. They're not necessarily as progressive as we are, but they're good people. And they don't like the corruption.
No.
And they don't even necessarily like our representative. But they're not going to do anything about it. And so it's sort of like the system just keeps going.
Correct.
So even the people that are in it that recognize it aren't standing up for it. That's the problem.
Yeah, that is the part of it.
It's a courage thing. It is. I mean, it's funny. Like we always said that time for courage. That was our...
Look,
slogan,
people came up to you during the election, even people of note that said, I'm supporting you.
Right.
There was a very prominent candidate down here who we will not name.
No,
and
he was sad.
It wasn't just that person. It was that person's family, kids that the person's sons.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the person that came up to me and was basically like, please take me.
That's a
you.
Whole other person that is within the establishment. I'm talking about a very noted candidate.
Yeah.
It's
true.
You know, when they're basically saying, I really want to say this publicly, but unfortunately, if I do, it'll sink my campaign and
right.
I can't do that. But rest assured that we appreciate what you're doing and we know that change has to happen.
And so we do believe that in our case, the head of the snake being cut off would make some significant ripple down effect changes through our state party and would sort of allow a certain freedom for any sort of progressive anything entering into the Democratic Party here.
And that's why one thing that we do emphasize, and we've been emphasizing here, as Billy Corbin, friend of the show, Miami filmmaker, likes to say, so goes Florida, so goes the rest of the country.
Which is so weird because we're so backwards, people.
But the one thing we have gotten right in Florida is ballot initiatives.
Yes.
And so if we get two huge ballot initiatives in order, legalizing cannabis with home grow and ranked choice voting, this is something that's already being talked about in other states like Washington, California, regarding universal health care. Well, okay, if you can't get it through the legislature, then get it through a ballot initiative. Do whatever you have to do. Screw the elected officials that are corrupt who don't.
And by the way, one thing everybody along the lines of ballot initiatives that we really need to be paying attention to is that they're trying to increase the amount of people that you need to pass a ballot initiative up to like almost 67%. Yeah, no, I believe it should be 50.01%. Sorry,
the system is not going to course correct itself.
No,
it's not going to. In fact, it's going to make it even harder. So you need to become much more cohesive. And that is why I really think.
So funny from Chuck Schumer. No,
make vote fair again. It's like they can't even come up with their own stuff. And that's backwards.
Well, I can't. No, I don't know how to do it. Well, you can't. But anyway, it was supposed to go on the inside of my car. Make voting fair again.
And all of you guys should really be paying attention to the trucker convoy that's going on in Canada. And even though it is predominantly right wing that is organizing that, look at how effective they are. They are literally getting the Prime Minister of Canada to shit his pants.
But here's the thing. What's so interesting about this to me is, and according to people that I trust, it has been reported that in the trucking industry in Canada, 90% of the truckers are vaccinated. So mm-hmm. this group that's doing this is this sort of fringe right group and does not speak for the trucking industry. But the bigger point is if 90% of the truckers are vaccinated, then you don't need a mandate.
Yeah.
So I'm just throwing that out there. Or you could do it where, you know, mandate and or test. You know, I mean, that's the thing.
Marsh, I can't really say for sure, but I would say this. Ranked choice voting is definitely preferable to jungle primaries.
No, jungle primaries won't help us. And when I say us, I mean people that are trying to fight the machine, okay? Jungle primaries will not help us. Ranked choice voting will help us.
I wouldn't necessarily say that that jungle primaries wouldn't help
it
us.
Wouldn't.
I'm not going to say that.
You'd end up with two Republican candidates almost every time.
I guess
it's jungle primary.
You're referring to Debbie as a Republican candidate?
So I remember watching a talk on this from someone who really was explaining it. And it was basically like Elections for Dummies. There was like the Robert Reich dry erase type of thing. And I'm telling you, jungle primaries in Florida not benefit the group of people that we're trying to benefit. That's what I'm Correct. Saying. So when the math is done for Florida, we will not be served by jungle primaries, but we would be served by ranked choice voting. So there is a difference and people need to understand.
Well, I wouldn't say that it's R versus D or it's E versus P. It's basically it's corporate versus non-corporate. That's what this argument is. And so anyone who sees it as something else, you're never going to get anywhere if you don't recognize that it's corporate special interests that have captured our government and our elected officials. And even the ones that we think are on our side, they get enchanted by the opportunity to be a big shot.
Christopher Dutton, are you related to Beth Dutton from Yellowstone? Because she's my spirit animal. Mm.
No wonder you would say.
I do. My problem is that I really take like fictional characters seriously sometimes in the shows. Like Beth Dutton to me is she's just the like if that would be me. Like
I haven't watched Yellowstone.
I can't
yet,
even
so
with anybody who's ever watched Yellowstone. Beth Dutton is my spirit animal.
Well, my spirit animal is Auntie Dufresne, Shawshank Redemption. There you go.
Yeah, see? Jungle primaries works in California because it's a blue state, right? So we like that. It's sort of like we like it when it works for us. But you could see
interesting.
That, yeah.
Interesting. No, that's important. I mean, again, we're trying to make these wholesale changes, but again,
I just think they try to convince people that jungle primaries is ranked choice voting and get them to sign on to it. And it's not.
And again, we don't want to be making any huge missteps. That's the other part of this movement that has to be considered is whether or not, you know, we are going to be making any significant changes. If we are, we have to consider, is this in the best interest of what we're trying to do? Change for the sake of change is not a good thing. That's something we have to remember. So even though jungle primaries were on the ballot in 2020 and they came very close to passing, they only missed by...
He really needed to hear that today too, because we were having a little bit of hair malfunction before we came on. So.
Well, I fixed that.
And it's never me. It's always him.
Well, I have...
Please.
I have some weird cowlick in the back of my head. So.
Please.
Yeah. It's much easier to be a guy than a girl, guys.
Not you. Not you. You are way more high maintenance than me.
That's what you say.
That's what I know. I don't stare with a face roller.
So we're just waiting for our guest to arrive, but we have now our main guest has arrived. So for a lot of you guys, you know, we talk very often about, you know, what's going on right now regarding the electoral map changes. Obviously, anytime it's a census year, can you believe that we voted on the census in 2020 and we're still dealing with it now?
You mean getting the districts?
Getting these
districts.
Well,
they have until June, whatever the date is, the last qualifying.
And they will wait till the last.
Well, yes, but it's whatever the qualifying date is for candidates. So then according to them, you know, a statewide race or a congressional race only really takes 2 months to prepare for. So you don't need to know where your districts are.
Well, we have a lot to discuss this evening and we are very pleased to welcome back to the show a couple of renowned guests that we like.
But are you going to give a little bit of the background story? You want them to give the background?
They will give it.
Okay. I'm just saying
she's running for Congress in New York's newly drawn 3rd Congressional District, which is Long Island, but now is going to include a number of other places. She is the one who laid the foundation to make this a progressive district. Melanie DiRigo, welcome back to Generational Change.
Thank you so much. It's so nice to be here. How's everyone doing?
Hi, good. How are you? You look so great.
Oh, that is so kind of you. I just threw some makeup on because I was about to fall asleep, but I have a little friend with me too.
Oh, look, Lou. Lou, it's like Sophie.
This is Bacon.
Yes, it's a Shih Tzu.
Yes, his name is Bacon.
Bacon.
He's one of my many Valentines.
Oh, that's so sweet. Mm.
Yes. Oh, everybody loves bacon.
But everybody does.
Just
love
about
bacon.
Just about everybody loves bacon. And in the other corner,
okay,
you
always do it like we're having some sort of debate on this. Well, show.
We're actually having a doggy show, so that's what we're going to have.
But
now.
Look at her face. Seriously, she's the cutest. Like the other people look at their dogs and say, "You are really the cutest dog in the history of the canine species."
Well, I don't know. Bob is going to have something to say about
okay,
this.
Okay, I'm just saying.
So. The Long Island activists are one of the best grassroots groups we have encountered since we've been involved in politics. We're all the way down here in Florida. So the lovely Melanie DiRigo has the opportunity to rub elbows with them. And
we don't have such group. We're working on that.
Yeah, we're trying.
We're working on that.
We are a little envious, but Mr. Buonaspita, welcome back to Generational Change.
Hey, hello. How are you? Do I have my audio on?
Yes,
we hear you
good.
So right, I have a dog as well.
I see something wagging. That's a manly man
this
dog. That's like a real man's dog.
Pepper was my Christmas gift 4 years ago. Oh. A rescue dog from down south, actually.
Oh. That's the best.
Your neck of the woods.
That's really sweet.
All right.
Yeah. But adopt, don't shop, as they say, if you can.
Lou was bought, but she's crazy and needs to be rescued. So.
Yeah. That may be true. So guys, great to see you again. And obviously this was a conversation that I think we were going to want to have anyway, in lieu of the fact that there is this massive, people really need to understand that this is all about corporate special interests, regardless of party, it doesn't matter. And New York has just done exactly what they said that they were trying to stop the Republicans from doing, which is gerrymandering the hell out of these districts. And so now New York appears to be going, oh, we've got our third and final guest of the evening. So before I continue, another gentleman from the Long Island activists who Mr. Buonaspina had the pleasure of introducing us to, Joe Sackman. Welcome to Generational.
Hi.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Joe, where's your dog? Bring your dog.
I know. Joe has a dog, too. I was just going to say, we're showing off our puppies.
Okay. We did our dogs, but I was just going to say, like, we were just introducing and just saying, you know, what's going on. But I just want to know, this has been like, I think of this as like an emergency meeting. When I heard about what was going on up there, I said, we have to talk about this. So this isn't just let's talk to the New York people, because it really is a focus on Florida Day.
Yes.
So this is just an important meeting that needed to happen. So anyway, get back into your intro.
So for those of you who may not know, New York is gerrymandering their own state. It is currently sits at an 18-8 Democrat advantage in the federal House seats. And now it is going to be a 23-3 advantage in the federal House seats in the state of New York. So for those who think that when the Democrats do something like this, that it isn't going to come back and really kick us in the ass in other places like Florida, where we will be gerrymandered very, very nicely by the wonderful GOP. This is something that needs to end. But unfortunately, the number one seat that we had been looking at as a seat that we really felt could be flipped non-corporate to from corporate to non-corporate was New York's third congressional district. And now it looks like a little fly in the ointment has been thrown in there. So whoever would like to jump in and share with us what's going on, because we know that some other interested parties have decided to get into the race after somebody who is on the show tonight put in all of the legwork to make this a flippable seat to being a non-corporate Democratic seat.
Yeah, talk about what's going on there, because this is all very disappointing to me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me go ahead and just jump in quickly. Let me just say hello quickly to Rob and to Joe. I didn't know Joe was going to be on tonight. So very excited to see Joe and Rob always. As you said, I'm very lucky. I get to see them pretty frequently up here in New York. But regarding New York 3, so here's the thing, right? It's a tough one because the federal government failed to implement a gerrymandering ban, right? And we do know that there will be states across the country that do gerrymander the heck out of their state. So it's a tough place to be in, right? To say, well, we shouldn't fight back, right? Because I think that many of us on the, you know, more left side of the Democratic Party are constantly voicing our opinions to push back, fight harder, fight back, stop rolling over, right? So I think there's an element of, you know, this is part of them fighting back, you know, and really it's a failure at the federal level. That being said, look, there were many ways that New York could have redrawn the districts. And I think they certainly could have done it in a way where representation was a little bit more equitable. And like what I mean by that is, like, for example, in my district, and for those of you who don't know New York, you may not know that the traffic here is horrendous and it can be very difficult to get around. From one end of the district to the other, it could take, you know, if you're lucky, half a day, but likely more. So that means, you know, let's take a holiday time. Let's say it's Hanukkah and you want to get to a menorah lighting in several, you know, different areas of the district. And it's just not really going to be possible. Instead of maybe hitting two or three tonight, you're probably hitting one. So who suffers, right? You're in your communities less. So that's really what I have been really concerned about. I spoke out against it for that reason. I mean, I feel very confident, you know, with what the work that we have laid and the work that we have done in Long Island and Queens, you know, I know that we're going to bring that same level of excitement and passion and organizing to the Bronx and to Westchester. And, you know, it's already happening in those communities. So I think it's a really wonderful opportunity for us to bridge together and fight. But, you know, I'll just do a plug now. If anyone would like to chip into my campaign, we probably need a boat to row across the Sound. So, you know, every dollar helps.
And what is the website so we can get it up right now so that everybody knows if they are?
Yes. So you can visit my website at darrigo2022.com, DARRIGO2022. Or you can simply go to donatetomelanie.com and make a contribution there as well.
Yeah, guys, support Melanie, because there is a lot of infighting and nonsense and backstabbery, from what I understand, going on. That's extremely disappointing to me. And, you know, it's I always feel like I'm in this position where I would never want to suggest to somebody not to run or not to get into a race. But there's just certain times when the people are doing it out of very self-serving reasons, because if it was really about the people, then you would appreciate the demographic and the work that's already been done in your district. Like, you would recognize that you don't need to be in that lane. There's somebody in that lane. And so there seems to be a loyalty problem up there. So, I mean, is that what you were telling me?
If you want to see just how bad left politics can be, see how opportunistic some people can be when certain things come around.
So, yeah, I mean, what's
Bob, Joe, whoever wants to hop in and let us know exactly what's going on. Because again, this district has now changed. It's now including, as Melanie alluded to, parts of the Bronx and parts of Westchester. That is amazing.
That's far.
So, yeah.
Well, it actually goes to the Connecticut border now. So we're five counties. You know, from Suffolk County to Queens, to go over a bridge, head into the Bronx, and then up there. And it's just a smaller portion on the coast. And look, you know, as I said, we're very focused on delivering for people. And we think that there's a lot of opportunity, particularly on climate resiliency and other issues, to make a big impact. But I will go ahead and pass the mic to my friends, Joe and Bob.
So, I mean, I will say, you know, I gave testimony to the commission before, you know, before their first set of mats about we need, because I did run in 2020 for the state assembly, and the district I ran in Assembly District 15, I used to joke about how it was a drawing by a 3-year-old Picasso, you know, that's how bad it looked. And it just looks a little better now. You know, a lot of people are asking for the districts to be, you know, to keep communities together, because many times communities were split. Where I live, you had three senators representing, state senators representing my community. Other communities, they were so split up that you could basically say their vote didn't matter. And that was something that many people were concerned about. Like, they didn't go out to vote because, like, why vote? It doesn't matter. No one comes here. No one visits me. No one talks to me. And, you know, we want our representatives to do that. And, you know, Melanie's a great example. She's out there. She listens to people. She understands. You know, I was saying earlier that she has a life experience to understand anybody from any part of this district, even the newer parts. So if there's anyone who could represent the entirety of this district, it's Melanie. And I'm not just saying that to, you know, prop her up. It's true. I've seen her in action. And with this district, CD3, I find it strange because they said they wanted to include the whole shore, the shoreline district. But if that was the case, you would have included the entire North Fork, which would have been Suffolk and Nassau County. Why didn't you do that? And I can't see the logic saying, well, we wanted to go up and around because you could have done that. If that was really the reasoning you had for this, then you could have stretched this district out all the way out to the North Fork and just did, you know, Suffolk, Nassau, and Queens. Because they definitely did that with CD1. CD1 goes all the way out, I think, from Montauk to Plainview, which is like the town next to me.
Yeah.
So I called that the coffee stain.
Yeah.
Somebody just spilled their coffee and decided to draw a district. So it's very obvious that these districts were drawn with a specific purpose. You know, I do believe in fairness and competitiveness within a district. I think it's very important to have the right type of representative for the people that live within that district. And it's hard to argue sometimes that we're going in the right direction with our democracy when we see things like this. So, but I am confident, even with the way it is drawn and the way things are, you know, we're going to have, we're going to have a great representative in Melanie DiRigo.
I think so too. And yes, we are
Roger Meadows.
New York Health Act. Yes. Roger. We definitely want to see the New York Health Act passed. We actually have been talking about that for a while on this show, and I think it'll be like the best bet we have. I didn't think California was going to happen. I mean, I was hopeful, but I didn't think California was going to happen.
Right.
Yeah. And there are some great progressives that are running right now at the state level. You know, including Jermaine Williams is trying to become the next governor. And so we'll see what ultimately ends up happening. But Bob, please share with us your thoughts on, you know, the way this whole thing is shaping up, because it looks like somewhat popular state senator has decided to get into the race and is already trying to line up support from some of the heavy hitters, which is unfortunate that they're already doing that. There hasn't been a debate yet, hasn't been anything. And when you put your thumb on the scale the way that they're doing, it's almost like, okay, well, then you're proving that it doesn't matter if you're progressive. It just proves that you're there to play politics and your concern is not who's going to serve the district best. You don't even know who's going to serve the district best. You don't even know who's running. You just decide, all right, my friend's running, so now let's just put our thumb on the scale. And that's the type of thing that we're really, in the progressive movement, we're really trying to get away from. What is your assessment in terms of where things are at right now?
Well, my heart is with Melanie, period. And regardless of how they drew these lines, you know, I'm going to be supporting her. And she has the support of lots of people. So I'm not really worrying about who else is in the race. You know, people have to stand by what their positions are. We know Melanie's positions, you know, and I'm very confident that she's going to be a champion of Medicare for All, knowing as much as she does about that as anybody. And whether or not we get the New York Health Act passed or not, eventually we need a single payer healthcare system for the whole country. So, you know, my money's with Melanie, with any of these candidates running. And she's been articulating that, you know, since what, 2020, since she first ran. So I'm not really worried so much about maybe the district lines as much as maybe Melanie is. You know, I get, you know, from a candidate's perspective, you gotta, you know, consider everything. But she's got a big backing on Long Island. Literally hundreds of progressives are behind her. And we're going to come out, all of us. And now that your district actually comes out to where I live, I'll be out there in Stony Brook for you.
All right. Well, petitioning is coming. Petitioning is coming. So
Joe's already warned me I have to do lots of petitioning. He's already given me some homework. And I'm going to be getting some volunteers with working with me as well. So we got you covered out here in Stony Brook. Don't you worry.
Thank you. Jen, you know how running is. I think, you know, often you get a curveball, right? And I think it was, so I'm not sure if you know Alita Gagarin, Mel Gagarin's wife. Mel ran in 2020 when we ran, he ran in Queens. And I've become quite close with them. And his wife, you know, she called me and she's like, "Are you okay?" Everything was going kind of nuts, you know, when these new district lines came out. And she said, "Listen, work your plan. And so now it's become this sort of mantra, right? And every time I think anyone gets a little shook or whatnot, I'm like, nope, we've got a plan. Let's get back to the plan. And it just really centers us. You know, we've been doing the work in this district for years. I think about 80% of the district is still Long Island and Queens. And, you know, we have a huge base of support there. And so when Bob talks about hundreds of progressives, these are like volunteers, you know, these aren't just votes.
Yeah.
We can't even fathom.
We have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of volunteers. And we're really excited about it because, you know, in 2019, when I launched my campaign for the 2020 cycle, you know, folks told me, "You're crazy." Not Bob and Joe. They were down right away. But a lot of folks told me I was crazy. They said, "A progressive can never win this district. You'll never win on Medicare for All. Get out of here with the Green New Deal," right? And we said, "Watch us." And we, you know, very methodically hit the ground, like quite literally, and knocked the doors and had the house parties and continued and kept bringing people in. And, you know, it's organizing 101. We met people where they were at. We asked them what they cared about, what they were concerned about. And we talked to them about what we were running on, you know, and we didn't make them feel bad for not understanding high level policy. We really just broke it down and had human connections. I think we've developed a really successful model for education. And, you know, and then of course in 2020, the pandemic hit, you know, we did really well in the election. You know, we got nearly 30% of the vote being spent 9-1, and you know how tough that was. But, you know, I feel like it was a huge success. And then, you know, I had intended to take, you know, a month or so off to rest and recuperate, but I think I had 5 days. And then I got a call and it was like, "Hey, you know, we're ramping up the Invest in Our New York," which used the formerly Tax the Rich campaign. I'm like, "All right, I'm there," you know? And so we continued to organize and, you know, Long Island activists were really, they've been out front for a very, very long time, you know, leading on these issues. And then I think, you know, my campaign really brought some new groups into the fold. And in many ways, I think started this. And, you know, Bob and Joe, you can feel free to chime in here, too. But I think in many ways it helped us form a tighter coalition. And then after the election, we just kept building on it and building on it. You know, so I always say this, you know, I'm running again, but it's I really feel like I'm representing the community. And it's not just about me, but it's all of us. And that's how I know we're going to win, because you can't stop the movement and you can't stop us this time.
That's how it's supposed to be, you know, like that's how it's supposed to be. And I appreciate it so much because we talk about that all the time. We talked about it on our campaign that the campaign is more about just getting one person elected. The campaign is part of the movement. The campaign is building a bigger and bigger coalition. So regardless of win or lose, if you build coalitions, you win because it's still pushing forward. So and I so appreciate that you are obviously running that kind of campaign. Which is just being the representative. That's what I always said. You want to be the representative, just be the representative because the person there isn't doing it.
And so we know, and this is for Joe and Bob, obviously, you know, we have this other person who is running that is trying to cut into the progressive lane. But the one that I do want to talk about is, and I don't want, there's no reason to name these candidates because I don't want to give them any credence.
No.
There's no point. But there obviously is the candidate that I think is probably the one that You know, Swazi is probably going to get behind Mr. Wheeler and Dealer, as I like to call guys like that, who's, I guess, was some type of investment broker of sorts. And, you know, is like trying to line up all of these support people now. And I can see this really being like sort of like a quid pro quo type candidate who has his hooks in the area and has had him for a while. Can you tell us more about this type of candidate and what that more or less represents? And do you see that, you know, the North Shore Long Island is really getting tired of these types of representatives coming in that are basically just there to deal with the corporate special interests of Nassau County and, you know, just New York City overall, that that people are kind of getting, they've had enough of that type of thing.
Right. That, well, that's a great observation. I think Melanie alluded to this earlier. You know, a candidate that speaks to the kitchen table issues, you know, the things that we care about, health care, jobs, property taxes, you know, community safety, education, schools, you know, the things that we, you know, wake up in the morning and you worry about. That's the messaging that needs to go out there, investment into the working class, the middle class, not corporations. So when, you know, when you present yourself as a candidate who has a history of that, of just, you know, pandering to corporations or big money, it's going to be obvious to those who pay attention, especially those who voted primary. Those are the people who usually pay more attention to things than, you know, than, sure, you know, your general election. So it's not going to be any dem will do. It's going to be, you know, who really represents my values. And I don't see, well, there will be the Swazi, you know, diehards who will go for whoever he endorses, but they are not as plentiful as they used to be, especially now, since Swazi is pandering to the right. I mean, he pandered to the right previously, but now he's going hard to the right. And we have seen whenever you go hard to the right, well, you might as well just change your registration, go Republican, and that's it, because that's who you are. You're a conservative, you're a corporatist, and nobody wants that, you know, except for the corporatists. They're the only one that want that. But the average Joe is going to go, I don't need that. I don't need that type of representative. I need someone who's going to fight for me and my family. So the Swazi endorsement at this time is, I think, going to be poisonous. You know, it really would be, because he's running for governor and people are going to be looking at him as, you know, are you a Republican, Republican light? What is this? You're running as a Democrat. People don't like that. I'll name names. Josh Lavazin, this guy, you know, he ran around and, you know, he's been always running to the right and pandering to the PBA and, you know, whoever would give him a campaign contribution. So, and it's cost him greatly. There's no support for him in this race. And you're going to see that at the higher level with Swazi. You know, we're tired of that type of politics. We need investment in the middle class. That's it. If we don't start investing into the middle class and the working class, where are we going? You know, we've seen stagnant wages for 40 years, you know, and basically everybody's moving into poverty. That's where we're going. I hate to sound like a Debbie Downer, but that's where this country's going. If we're not fighting for, you know, the majority, which is the working class, then who are you fighting for? You're fighting for Jeff Bezos.
I'm just going to add to what Joe just said. We are having success. Progressives are having success in New York State, and we need to celebrate those successes. Joe and Melanie were talking about the Invest in New York acts. There are six acts that are in the state legislature right now. But this last session, pieces of them got passed. And they raised originally $4 billion. It's now up to $10 billion. And that money went into education, and it went into taking care of undocumented workers that weren't covered by federal legislation, $1 billion there. So, and we're pushing harder with those kind of changes. So it's not like, you know, there isn't a ground swelling out there for progressivism. It's coming from outside the party, I'll just say.
We are so jealous. We don't have anything like this.
Well, as you guys know, the most recent election of consequence ended in horrifically controversial fashion with India Walton running for mayor of Buffalo. We saw the tactics that the Democratic establishment will employ, so much so that they'll get in bed with the GOP to stop progressives. I always say, and you saw this during the 2020 election, hate to say it, but you know, Biden was more concerned about appealing to the wealthy Long Island suburbanites than he was the working class, you know, in, let's say, the Bronx, in Queens, in Staten Island. It's very definitive in terms of how they're going to try to hold this off. But as I like to say, the thing that's great about the progressive movement is that most people are doing this because they actually believe in the movement, not because they have to be paid to support the cause. Whereas the corporate side has to be paid to support the cause. No one is just going to say, oh, yeah, let's screw more workers over. But can I have a little money, too, please? You know, that to me, I think, is really what defines this movement in a lot of ways. And while that loss with India was devastatingly bad because of just how much they exposed themselves regarding how this whole thing works, there's really not this, oh, it's this red blue thing. No, it's this corporate versus non-corporate thing. And I'd like to think that more people are inclined to become sort of nihilistic about it when they see those things. So my question would be, why not be nihilistic at this point? Because we know that that's what's in the water in the progressive movement. It's like, F this. Why should we even try? This is what they're going to do every time. But I kind of get the impression that the more they try these really underhanded tactics, the more they're just going to expose themselves and more people are going to look at progressives as like, maybe they're not so bad after all.
Yeah, well, look, you know, I sometimes joke that I'm also a motivational speaker because, you know, I call folks many, many hours of the day, and I hear that a lot. Folks are feeling really disenfranchised. They're feeling really left out. They're feeling really left behind. And I understand it, right? Because I think we've all been there, right? It happens to the best of us, you know, even those of us that are really in the trenches pushing for change. Sometimes it's overwhelming. But I, you know, I'll often tell them, like, I get it, I understand, but what's the alternative? Is the alternative to throw up our hands and walk away? And then what happens? Because I don't really think that, I don't think people realize just what a precarious moment we're in as a country. I don't think folks realize that democracy is barely hanging on by a thread. I don't think folks realize what's about to happen in June when Roe v. Wade gets gutted or overturned completely. You know, I think it's going to be incredibly hard to keep the House and the Senate, and never mind get a supermajority in the Senate to get anything passed since they refuse to end the filibuster. And the White House, it's just going to be increasingly hard to do that. And then that means it's even more difficult for progressives to pass legislation. I think when Trump was in office, folks were animated. They were paying attention because they could not believe what a horrific man was occupying the White House, right? It felt like we were in a ping pong game. We were getting, you know, abused on all sides. And now that he's gone and we have someone who has a friendly face in the office, I think there's this, I don't even know how to put it, but people are too relaxed. People are too comfortable. People think everything's okay. And it's not okay. We're actually still almost just as bad as when Trump was in office. Yeah. And if we don't fight like hell, no one else will. Right. So what I say to folks is, what kind of world do you want for your children? What kind of world do you want for your grandchildren? Because the fights that we have ahead of us in our generation are so big. They are so big and they are so present and they are so right now that it is up to us, the ones who are awake, right? It is up, the ones who have looked up. It is up to us to bring these folks in with us. And that is why I know that the future of the Democratic Party is with progressives, because we're the only ones fighting for these issues. We're the only ones animating and exciting the base. We're the only ones calling it out and telling it like it is and saying, no, we are the party of human rights, of civil rights, of social equity. We are the party of labor. So God damn it, let's start acting like it, you know?
Yeah, we're working it here, but it's very slow coming. I mean, Florida will definitely not be on the front end of that anytime soon. But it's right. I've said it for a long time. We don't have a Labor Party anymore. It's really that simple in terms of there's nobody representing labor.
All right. We will address this. Anybody who donates $20 is going to get some type of a response to this. Okay. Go, Jen. Go, Melanie. Love and respect to each on the paddle. What do you all think about Tulsi 24? Break stranglehold on the corporate interests of the populist, call of their BS, question the narrative in public. Well,
promise. I think just Tulsi's gotten too toxic.
It's not just that Tulsi's gotten too toxic. I think the real issue with Tulsi is the fact that I think it's a deeper issue, not because of the way that she's gone off, but a bigger issue on the left in politics in regards to why she's gone in the direction that she's gone in. This is somebody who served our country and serves our country as a medic. I mean, she really has put her life on the line in many instances. And there was so much disrespect that was thrown in her direction. People were saying that she was a traitor to the country when she was running. That type of stuff has no place, especially for somebody who actually puts on the uniform for our country. I mean, to accuse somebody of treason is a very serious thing. But one thing that Jen and I were talking about earlier, which is something we notice in left politics, there really is this problem with embracing people who will put on the uniform for our country. There is very few military supporters that are on the left. There is a huge difference between people who serve our country and those who serve the military-industrial complex. I think there has to be a distinction, a very firm distinction between those two things. And we were listening to Kyle Kulinski of Secular Talk earlier, who mentioned the fact that one of the reasons why the right is so effective getting things done is because they do embrace people who serve in the military, and they are very, you know, they're very military. Efficient. They're very efficient. They understand a top-down strategy. And if they hone in on an issue, they usually get it done. Whereas the left tends to be very scattered. There's this whole idea of, well, I don't want that person getting credit because I want credit. It's this whole, you know, put the spotlight on me. I want the attention. I don't want this other person getting it. And while I absolutely disagree with the direction that Tulsi is going, because she is way too far to the right at this point, I understand initially why she broke, because of the way that she was being treated. So would love to hear your guys' thoughts on the way that the right seems to be much more efficient and effective when they get behind a particular issue, whereas the left seems to be a lot more
infighting.
You know, there's a lot more of this infighting stuff that's really got to go away. It's so counterproductive to what we're trying to do. Whoever wants to jump in, love to hear your thoughts.
I'll jump in on that. So it's a question I ask myself a lot, because I started off with campaign finance reform when I started getting really into politics and activism. And there was always a question about the left and the right and where they stand on this. And, you know, sometimes we really do meet in on that. And, you know, I've worked with organizations on the right who, you know, stand with organizations on the left when it came to, you know, anti-corruption and, you know, money in politics and how we deal with it. So the thing I observe is that the right is very good at coming together and saying, okay, we're going to work on your issue today, and tomorrow we're going to work on my issue. And, but they all know that's going to happen. They trust, if trust is the right word to use, that they're going to get on this, and they're very strategic. They look at the long game. You could see after Obama had won his first election, what did they do? They went out and they took all the state houses. And then after that, what did? They gerrymandered, right? And they made sure they were going to keep that. And then they can could take over Congress, the Senate, et cetera. So, you know, the right is very good at that. Whether you're social conservative or fiscal conservative or evangelical, whatever, they come together and they toe the line. You see it every time that they start questioning people, you know, in a committee. They all ask the same question. They all come in with the same question. The left is a very diverse, you know, a very diverse place. And we are willing to argue with each other, you know, and sometimes those arguments separate us instead of bringing us together. So it is, you know, I think there has to be a willingness to saying, okay, how do we work with each other on in this spectrum of, you know, lefty politics, and be willing to say, okay, your issue is important. Let's work on that first. And I will say, in New York, we've been learning that lesson. We've built coalitions here, and that was the way forward. We had the Housing Justice for All coalition, tremendous, you know, reforms for housing that happened. You know, the Investor New York coalition that came out of Budget Justice, which was a small group that you know, said we got to do something about the budget and how it's an austerity budget in New York, and that bloomed into over 200 organizations that raised, like Bob said before, over $10 billion. And our small changes that we won, if we got what we wanted, we would have probably raised over $100 billion from the projections that we had expected. We were only expected to raise about $4 billion. We raised over $10 billion on those small progressive tax reforms. So coalitions are a way to go, you know, coming together and, you know, let's go back to Bernie, not me, us, you know, it's the movement. So we have to have that perspective. What is the movement? What does it mean to us? What is our goal? I think, you know, and this is, to me, it's nonpartisan. It's the climate crisis. They did politicize it, but climate crisis is a nonpartisan issue. You know, what kind of world are we going to have in a few years? We may not have one, and, you know, maybe things that can live in the, you know, the extreme temperatures and the extreme changes are going to be there, but we may not have one for ourselves and our children. So that's, I think, should be a unifying force for us. And maybe that's what we have to work on first. So, you know, there's a lot of different things that we have to come together and say, what are we going to change? How are we going to change it? And really, you know, come together on that. So
I think one of those things is labor. And we talk about that a lot. I mean, you have a lot of good stuff going on up there in New York right now, as far as labor movement is concerned. I mean, we're kind of stymied down here. We don't have that again, but that's one of those things where it's not a left or right thing. And the people that are in unions are both. So like, workers' issues are not left-right issues. There's a lot of people that are socially conservative that are working people that believe in a living wage. So I think that it's economic justice issues are really nonpartisan issues, just like climate.
Yeah, I agree with that. Sure. See, we've already come to agreeance.
Well, I think we're all on the same side, but I'm going to I have something to say, but I want to give Rob a chance.
I was just going to say that Joe and I are very actively involved in the Working Family Party, and they are a labor party. They also are a progressive party, and they've moved. There was some issues in the past with how progressive they are, but the Working Family Party of today is both a pro-labor, pro-wages, and pro-progressive party, and it's growing in New York State. I'm sure you're familiar with the efforts of our prior governor to try to pretty much do away with third parties. And the Working Family Party came through with that threshold that was set on them. And, you know, and we're actively involved with getting good candidates right now. That's something that Joe and I also do with Loyola.
How does that work with, like, are they on the ballot? They have ballot access.
Right. Okay. And there's fusion voting in New York. So there could be cross endorsement between parties if they want to. So right now, the four parties that have ballot access are the Conservative, the Republican, the Democrat, and the Working Families Party.
There's a Conservative Party?
Yes. And the Conservatives are, that they'll say, I'm in the Conservative Party, I'm not in the Republican Party. They don't want to be in the Republican Party. They want to be in that you know, the Conservative Party. And we used to have a lot more. It used to be, the Green Party's still here. It just doesn't have ballot access. There's the Independence Party. You know, they're there, but they don't have ballot access.
Right. Yeah.
They increase the number, you know, 2% or I think it's 130,000 per gubernatorial and or presidential year that you have to reach to keep the ballot line. So
I'm going to say approximately 24 people have been interviewing candidates these last couple of weeks who want the WFP endorsement. Some of them are Democrats. Some of them are not. Some of them just want to run on the WFP label. And that's something we're very happy about, because in order to get that endorsement, you have to show that you're going to be supportive of a variety of progressive issues. In the case of New York State, you need to be behind the New York Health Act. It's a non-starter. Not only say I'm going to support it, because we've been burnt in the past, especially on Long Island, where we have these state senators who promised they were going to support it. They get elected and they change their mind. You know, so we're raising the threshold in terms of like what we expect from you, not only support, but be a champion of it. And Melody actually is looking for the WFP endorsement. She's just came before us recently, and we're going to be making that decision soon. And so there is and the WFP is a nationwide party. It's stronger in some states and not others, but it is voicing the concerns of labor.
That's good to know. Do we even have that?
Well, that was the thing that was interesting during the mayoral primary. We saw just how discombobulated the race at the top was, and unfortunately, you've now got a not so good mayor. But the silver lining to that is the fact that you have three great organizations that we've observed in the state. You've got the Working Families Party, you've got DSA, and you've got especially the Sunrise Movement, and the candidates that they seem to have gotten behind really did very well in the down ballot races. And I think these types of organizations are the ones that really, in terms of, you know, the grassroots groups, if Bob, if you want to share your thoughts on that.
I'm just going to add to that list two more groups. One is NYPAN, which Long Island Activists belongs to, and 30 other progressive chapters in New York State. NYPAN's endorsements have been winning these last few cycles, and they're growing stronger. And NYPAN and Our Revolution have kind of fused. All right. So we work with Our Revolution as well in New York State.
We don't really have, like, we have that in Central Florida. There's a really good, like, Central Florida is where there's the active groups that are progressive. Where we are, it's sort of like a wasteland, and there's like nomads wandering aimlessly looking for leadership.
Let's not spoil them with or bring their spirits down, because they got enough problems in New York. They don't need to hear about how crappy a state we have. Everyone knows what Florida does all about. Our reputation precedes us. But there is a closing topic that we want to hit, because it's probably the most important one. And that, of course, is the New York Health Act. We saw what just happened in California. Probably not that surprising. But we've always maintained that New York is really the state that we see is the one that's going to, the one that's going to break through, is the most likely to break through. You have a lot of great assembly members and state senators that are really championing this issue.
We had Senator Rivera on,
who was great. You've got Jabari Brisport, who's really great. Mr. Kim is really great.
We're so jealous.
You know, you guys really have some really good representatives. And so what is going to be the difference in your observation? Because there's also a lot more true progressive federal candidates in the state of New York than there appears to be, with all due respect, in California. There's a handful, especially in Southern California. But New York, it really seems like there is this groundswell that really started with AOC's win, and it just continues to grow and grow over time. So what do you see is going to ultimately be the difference in 2022 and beyond in New York versus what just happened in California?
I think the first thing to observe is that, as I said before, coalitions, you know, the campaign for the New York Health Act has been growing and building their coalition, and it's going to be the groundswell that we need from the grassroots and labor and, you know, just statewide. I mean, so we're talking about a fundamental change to, you know, our healthcare system in New York, but that also is the seed for the change that we'll see nationally. So New York does it right and we'll be the model, and you'll see states following us because they'll say, this is how it's to be done. The GDP for New York is like $1.8 trillion or something. If I remember, it's bigger than Canada. So, I mean, we have the capacity to fund this.
Yeah.
And it's an issue that when you talk to people about it, I know Melanie talks to people about, you know, Medicare for All. You get past the buzzword, you know, because you get into like, do you want to pay co-pays? Do you want to be able to see any doctor you need to see and get any treatment that you need to get? This is the way we do it. We already this is something that's really great. I mean, it's like, oh, you're going to tax everybody and all that. There'll be more taxes, higher taxes. You already pay and don't get the service that you pay for. It's called the benefit contribution in your paycheck when you get the health insurance from your boss, right? They make a contribution, you make a contribution. Well, you're just changing the way that contribution is, you know, is going down and who it's going to. It's going into the single payer healthcare system. And you're going to get for you, your family, your grandmother, whoever, everyone's going to get what they need, whether it's immediate attention. You get a splinter, you get cancer, you're getting treatment. Okay. This is what the New York Health Act promises. Okay. Long-term care, vision, mental health, dental. How many people don't go to the dentist because
luxury bones? They're luxury bones.
Luxury bones, right. You know? So we can talk about this, and it really is going to come down to political will. The people want it, they need it, and it's really pushing the political will, and that's leadership. Governor Hochul, I don't think she's going to do it.
Nope.
I really don't think she's going to do it. I think that if it came on her desk, that not going to sign it. You know, so, and then we have to worry about the leadership in the Senate and the Assembly that are going to put this to the floor to vote. But we need candidates that are also going to be pushing for this. And that's Jumaane Williams. Jumaane Williams is going to fight. He's going to fight for single payer health care. And that's what we need. I mean, this is the fundamental. This is the fundamental change that one of the fundamental changes that we need in our society, because it is going to directly affect all of us. And we know, Bob and I know, Melanie, we know people who have died because they didn't want to pay a copay. They couldn't pay a copay. You know, there are people that we hear the stories all the time. They don't have the money for the insulin, or they're rationing it, or whatever it might be.
Or they want their kid to go to soccer, so they don't go to the doctor. Like, this is not unusual anymore at all.
No, bankruptcies are off the chart too. I mean, that's something like more than half of our bankruptcies are medical bankruptcies. That's embarrassing for us. Like, that's just not something that
we're the only developed country on earth that has.
Yeah, it's absurd. Yeah. And I've always thought that too. Like the single payer healthcare would be the one thing that would help the most people in the shortest amount of time, have the biggest impact, hands down. And the people, and also,
and it would help the economy.
Property taxes.
Yeah.
A significant amount of our property taxes go to benefits.
Right.
And it would
go down with the New York Health Act. Yeah. You know, Steve is online here. I see that he gave us a message for Steve. Is well aware of all the savings that would happen literally county by county throughout the state. And when I mentioned both the New York Health Act and Medicare for All are deflationary, they're not inflation, they're not going to raise taxes. If anything, by getting rid of all the middlemen, you know, all the private insurance companies, prices are going down. You know, it's a question of, you know, how much.
And this is something we can't do alone. I'm going to put it to the rest of the nation. You want single payer healthcare. Turn your eye to New York.
Yes.
Help us with this, because if we get it passed here, it's going to go, I know it's going to go to Jersey. It's going to go to, you know, Massachusetts. It's going to go to the Northeast. They're going to do it.
And Illinois. Then it's going to go nationwide. And it really does need to go nationwide.
And that's what we have to do. That's something that we have to do is a national movement.
Hopefully a good rash, you know? Actually, Jen. Yeah. Or a rash that can be treated.
I don't know.
Picture the outbreak map.
It's a rash that can be treated, because we'll have
health care. A rash with COVID. Listen, I'm from the Soprano state, and even though we get all the crap all the time from New Yorkers, the one thing I can say is that government is run 10 times better in New York than it is in Jersey. I wouldn't even think for a second that anybody would argue that point. And so it is going to take one major domino that's going to have to fall in order for it to really spiral, because that's how it happened. That's how it happened with cannabis, and
it should be
spread.
It should be New York. Look, California and Colorado have weed. You guys could have healthcare, and we can just.
We got weed now too.
Yeah, we do too.
I know we have nothing.
Can I just add a little bit to this conversation? Is that okay? If I can, I make a couple points real quick. Would that be okay? So one thing, you know, we've been talking about it for years, and Joe mentioned it. You know, it's choosing between, you know, getting your insulin or paying your electric bill, et cetera. But, you know, there's a whole new driver happening right now in the realm of COVID-19. I'm a mom, as I know you all know on this call here on the screen. I'm a mom of three children that are all in school. They're 11, 7, and 5 years old. And if they're sick, if they get a fever, they have to go get a COVID test. So I have to take them to the doctor. I have to get a COVID test. I have to keep them home. I have to wait 3 days. I have to, you know, and get it. And that can be, you know, a real barrier for working families. You know, it's even hard for us to, I mean, and thankfully, you know, we're like, okay, well, we've got to go take our kid and we work it out. But it's really hard for us with three kids trying to take them to, right? And that's a whole new expense too. So I wanted to mention that because I think it's really important. But just to build a little bit on what Joe was saying about how do we get here and why do we feel like we're closer than ever? You know, Joe started talking about coalitions. And I think, you know, we all know organizing, right? It's a movement and it comes and then it crumbles and then we've got to start all over. But right now we are, and I think Joe was right. He alluded to, we're figuring it out. We've figured out how to work together. And, you know, I think the Investor in New York campaign was a really good example of that, where there were organizations that came together that said, well, I'm really not going to get what we need as an organization, but I see this as the first step. And then after this step, then we'll work on my issue next time, as Joe said. And we did a damn good job, you know, and now we're bigger and we're stronger and we're a formidable block to contend with. And I think these things all work together, because when we talk about electing bold progressives, right, we have to look at the geography of New York. Historically, you know, seats closer to Manhattan have been more progressive, right? Folks living there are just a bit more progressive, so it's easier to elect progressives. It has been more difficult in other regions, and this is why I think what's happening in Long Island and in even Northeast Queens has been really, really exciting, you know, because now all of a sudden you are having candidates run for Congress and they're running on progressive platforms. Joe ran for assembly on a wildly progressive platform. It was amazing. And when that happens, you know, even if we're unsuccessful in the sense that we may not have become elected, we have shaken up that district. We have blazed a trail. We have educated folks. We have brought folks in, and that's how it really starts. And unfortunately, it's hard to ask people to run for office. It's a big sacrifice, as many of you on this call know. But when we do that, we inspire someone else to run, right? So I think it's those two pieces work together. But then there's also a third piece that I think are, you know, offshoots of both, which is your sort of neighbor to neighbor discourse, right? And I always talk about my grandma just passed away last month, but she used to always say to me, you know, Melanie, it's not polite to speak about politics, and you're always speaking about politics, you know? And I would say, well, I disagree. I tell my children that it's very polite to talk about politics, because that's how you help the world. That's how you become a good citizen. And, you know, it's this idea that we can have hard conversations about uplifting our communities, right? And I think all of these three pieces really work in tandem, because they all contribute to the change, you know? So but you have to start, and you have to know that as much as we want change tomorrow or last week, and we do want it, sometimes we have to kind of ready ourselves for the journey, right? Which is that this is going to take some time, and every year we build, we're going to get closer and closer and closer and closer. And that can't feel like a loss to us. Because sometimes, you know, especially, you know, my generation and younger, we're used to this sort of instant gratification. Well, I just worked my butt off for a year or 2 years. Why didn't this happen? Right. we, and I mean, it's an important piece, especially yeah. with young folks, right? Like coming in and even my generation folks that, or, you know, newly engaged in politics. It's really important to set those expectations. Yes, these are the goals. This is what we're trying to do. But if we don't get what we want, it doesn't mean we throw our hands up and walk away, right? We've just become closer. So I just think that's important as well.
That's yeah. that's
we an, talk about yeah. that all the time.
It's an excellent point. And of course, you know, we thought that it was going to be potentially until 2028 when the progressive movement would have an opportunity to really get in the game again at the highest level from a presidential perspective. But with the way things are going right now, we may have an opportunity to take another shot at it in 24. And one of those things that could potentially come of it that people may not recognize as of yet is that all of these non-corporate candidates like Melanie, guys that have, you know, run, and Jen has run, if the next, you know, head of the ticket that could potentially be a true progressive non-corporate candidate, that's who the progressives are going to support. They're not going to support basically anybody else who's a, you know, part of the corporate machine. It's just a question of when we're going to knock down the major dominoes. But I agree. I think it's just a question of time. And as the saying goes, the night is darkest just before the dawn. And that's how it feels for a lot of people. But that's why they fight so hard. It's like all of these major industries, the three major ones, of course, being big pharma. Well, you got to throw big tech in there now, but, you know, big agriculture and big oil, they're all interconnected. They cannot allow anything to change, because if one thing changes, it's like the whole exposure of the whole system gets called into question. And they're desperately trying to hang on to that at this point. And so I really think that we're heading in the right direction.
I think it's
right
a snowball. And I think that every layer just keeps making us bigger and bigger. And we always thought that. We always saw our campaign as part of the bigger movement. And I think that's very important. I'm actually writing a book about this right now, which is what I'm going to end up calling you, Melanie, and get a good quote from you. But like the idea that it's part of something bigger and the idea that it's not about you is something that I think more and more people are stepping up and realizing. And also that we can have non-corporate candidates win is also inspiring, because we hadn't seen that really until 18.
And we're starting to see it now, and it's going to take some time. And obviously things are still tough economically, and look, they're going to try to squeeze us to death until, you know, we give up, but we're not giving up. We just have to recognize that the country right now is, it really is like on the precipice of where we were 80 years ago. This country's either going in the direction of FDR, or it's going in the direction of Hitler, and they better decide very quickly which way they want it to go, because it's getting pretty testy out there, and eventually the dam's going to break. Guys, whoever wants to go first, whatever you're working on right now, anything you want to plug.
The New York Health Act.
Yes, well, of course. But, so yes, please share. Bob, lead us off.
Oh, sure. I was going to say, Joe, lead us off.
Okay.
I'm just soaking it all in. I definitely agree with you, Peter, that the future is on the side of change. And, you know, and it is one of those fights for the soul of America. I'm reading John Meacham's book right now. And, you know, he's got it right. We could go in one direction or another. And what Melanie said before is like, you know, what are our choices? Do we want to allow the forces of, you know, darkness to take over? I don't want to live in that world. You know, if I were growing up in Germany during the time of Hitler, I would have hoped I would have been one of those fighters. And I'm one of those fighters now. So for me, it just seems so logical. We need another progressive era. I say bigger and bolder than the first. You know, let's get that Medicare for all. Let's get a Green New Deal. Let's get tuition-free public schools, state schools for those that need it. You know, invest in our people, period. So, you know, I'm an optimist, but, you know, I'm a realist as well. And it, you know, it does take work, but I think we're on the right side.
Yeah.
Very well said. I'm going to throw this in here. Roger Meadows, good friend of the show. He's been very generous. Mel, this is for you. How about a federal law mandating all states allow voters to go around state legislature to place initiatives directly on ballot so we can pass state law and amend state constitutions via ballot initiatives? That's a good question.
Wow. Now, I'm just going to read that one more time. That's legislature. I mean, yeah, let's talk about that, Roger. Roger DMs me.
Do you? Okay, because do you don't have ballot initiatives there. Is that correct? Because that's something that we do here, that we have ballot initiatives, and we're actually quite successful. We're much more successful with that than we are with our legislature.
Yeah, so Roger, just shoot me a DM. I'm going to be traveling all day tomorrow, but let's talk about that for sure. I mean, I love that.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Roger's an awesome guy. We talk all the time. Big on public banking.
Yeah,
we're really hoping that'll pass this year.
I remember he told us he was in Albany for, the sit-in for the New York Health Act. So
invite Roger as a future guest.
Yep.
Yeah, he's very knowledgeable. He knows a lot about policy. After gerrymandering and the new districts, I was going to run. I'm not running now. So my focus is going to be electing people like Melanie and Jumaane Williams, and supporting, you know, InvestR New York's, you know, it's moving forward the New York Health Act, building with NIPAN. I'm on their executive committee along with Bob. And I'm just going to say, you know, also, people should look at, running locally. All politics is local, right?
Yes.
You don't have to move these mountains to make change. You can make it locally. And to what Jen said before, we have all these nomads looking for leadership. Well, you're the leader, you know, locally. You are. If you're there where you are, you can fight for change. There will be like-minded people who will join you. And you just got to go out there and do it. Build community. It begins there. And you will see the changes that need. Because that's what any movement needs, the movement to happen at the kitchen table. It has to start there. If we don't want it in our homes, if we don't want the change where we live, then someone's changing it for us. So yeah. The movement has to build at home and go from there. I started off with, I'm still trying to amend the Constitution for campaign finance reform and other things. And that doesn't happen just because, you know, some people in Congress decide, hey, I want to propose an amendment. They've done it a lot, like 11,000 times, and we only have had 27 amendments. So, you know, it's a tough thing to do, and you have to have a nation that wants those changes. So we can do that, you know. So, Eric Gamunder, yeah.
So, it's,
oh, you New Yorkers.
I know.
Hopefully, understands our sarcasm too.
We know Eric very well.
That's the national language
in New York. Eric is a champion of Medicare for All and the New York Health Act.
Eric was a wonderful member of LIA.
How come those aren't the New Yorkers that moved down here? Okay. You know, I've always wanted, like, the New Yorkers that have moved down here are not these same New Yorkers.
We have to retire. Another 10 years. Then you're here a welcoming state.
In 10 years, we're going to be underwater here. So, well, I don't know why they'll want to come unless they're scuba enthusiasts. So that will be, that's where we're going.
Yeah, we're trying to save Florida. I don't know if it can be saved, but, you know, we're doing the best we can. Melanie, close us out. It's been a wonderful conversation with you guys.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I'm just so pleased to see you both and be here with two of my good friends, Bob and Joe. So yes, hello to all the viewers again. And thanks so much for tuning in. As you know, Jen and Peter are the best, so definitely support them. I'm running for Congress in New York's 3rd District. I'm the leading progressive in the race. We've got all the grassroots support, but we are being significantly challenged by some external forces. Let's just put that way, with very big establishment ties from many different directions. So if you can chip in and help us get elected, we have many more voters to reach now that we have an expanded district, much more ground to cover. So if you can make a contribution, you can do that at Dorigo2020.com. Thank you so much. And we're also doing phone banks. So if you can't make a contribution, please sign up to volunteer.
Yeah. When is your primary,
Melanie? June 28th. So we are about 121 days, I think, away. So it, I mean, we're getting there. We are.
I will tell you from my perspective, nothing entices me to promote someone more than people doing the nonsense that they're doing to you. So while everybody else might have had to come on with like a group panel, I will be happy to platform you as much as possible because I find that infuriating. So, and as someone who was in your position, people have no idea. We had Nina Turner was in town a couple weeks ago, and we hosted a little fundraiser for her in Broward. And one of the things I talked about when I introduced her is people really do not appreciate what that's like to run for office. It's a 24/7 excruciating, mind warping, emotionally draining experience. And people are criticizing you for trying to help people. Yep. And I don't think people can really wrap their, like, it's bizarre to me. Like, I don't understand why people hate on me. I wouldn't understand. Like, it just doesn't make sense, but people do not appreciate it. And I want you to know that I appreciate it. And I see you and I find that really infuriating. So, and I find you very gracious. So I appreciate that.
As we continue to evolve as a movement, the ones who really put in the work, the ones who really stand out, like the Nina Turners and the Melanies of the world.
We know who they are.
Yeah. People in the long run, the movement will become more crystallized in terms of who's really in it for the right reasons and who's self-serving.
We know.
And we know that there are people who are in New York City right now who are going to see this podcast and they're not going to like it very much.
We see you.
And that's okay, because guess what? You can be just as sleazy as the corrupt ones are, because
eat
if you're
shorts.
Really doing eat my shirt. That's good. But at the end of the day, we are fighting for something bigger than ourselves. As you said earlier, Bob, it is not me, us. That is the message of the movement that started in the summer of 2015. It continues now. We're very grateful that you guys came
Thank
on
you
this
guys
evening.
Thank you so much.
We'll be seeing you soon.
And we are fighting for the Health Act.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Bye.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye. When we were talking about, I forget what it was we were in the discussion about, and it reminded me of trying to parse through this language of something that I was trying to parse through. And so I just thought people might be interested in this. So I have been given an opportunity, and I'm not going to give away too much information because it's not relevant at this moment what that is, but to be involved in a PAC and to chair a PAC. So I have been given, and so I'm researching it and looking at stuff, and there's the handbook, and this is a state thing. So I got it. And reading this handbook, and now let me explain the thing. I'm not gonna say I'm brilliant. I'm not. I'd like to think I'm sharper than the average bear.
Maybe.
Did go to law school. I was a philosophy minor. If somebody is good at really reading through and understanding and interpreting, that's what I'm good at. So I'm not just saying this like, you know, I'm so smart, but that's specific. So I want to read this because this is one of the clauses in the PAC handbook for the state of Florida. Okay. The payment by a person other than a candidate or political committee of compensation for personal services of another person, which are rendered to a candidate or political committee without charge to the candidate or political committee for such services. I read that 5 times. I even showed it to my husband, also a smart guy. Granted, he reads comic books and he doesn't usually read things with big words, but he's smart. And I showed this to him and I couldn't figure it out. Now I got the gist of it, but this is not meant for people to understand. I'm just saying, like somebody with like 3 degrees and serious focus could not figure that out. How are people following these rules? Guess what? I don't think they are. That's the thing. Florida, I have come to the realization, is like the Wild West for politics. So
it is.
It's like, there are no rules here.
No.
So I'm reading the handbook. I'll probably be the only person who read the handbook. I'm like the only person I know who read the Patriot Act. So why would this be any different?
Yeah, well.
The point is, I can read complicated things and understand them. And this is the most, it's like reading,
you know, it's kind of like nothing in politics could explain corruption better than when Nancy Pelosi was asked about Obamacare and how it had like 1200 pages or whatever it was. And her response was, we have to pass it before we know what's in it. And it's like,
I remember with the Patriot Act, they were all voting for it. None of them read it. Like they just
gonna,
didn't even
and their attitude is like, is this going to help me win my next election? Is this going to help me climb the ladder? Okay, I'll vote for it. That's it.
So what do we have coming up? I'm excited about Wednesday because I actually did read the book. He hasn't read the book.
we are finally going to have one of our favorite journalists on the show. And that, of course, is John Nichols from, what is he on?
He's on a bunch of things, but yeah, he has a new book out called Coronavirus Criminals.
Things with the Atlantic.
And Pandemic Profiteers. I think I'm almost done. I think I might have finished. If I'm not, I'm like in the last bit of it. But it's really interesting. Some of it is just really eye-opening. None of it very shocking.
He's with The Nation. He's with Katrina Vandenberg.
But it's a really good book. And each chapter highlights basically a different person that should be criminally held responsible for what happened with the coronavirus and all different aspects. Some of them are cabinet members. Some of them are billionaires. Like, it's just a variety of people that are all just extremely culpable.
I really don't like that John Nichols. He's a terrible person. It's totally fake news. Don't listen to anything.
Number one on the list.
He's a totally terrible person. You don't want to listen.
I will tell you one of the funniest things to me. Terrible. And now part of this guy.
He's terrible, Jen. He's terrible.
One of the really chapters was on Jared Kushner. And Jared
Don't
Kushner,
talk about my son-in-law like talk. That. He's a tremendous person.
I have to
person,
tell you guys, if you person, have any interest really in this great. Book, which is really interesting, I did the audio, and there was something unbelievably hilarious by somebody reading the Jared Kushner chapter that it wouldn't be as funny if I was reading it. It was being read to me. It was so funny. And I cannot wait to talk about this.
I am totally going to take out John Nichols before he comes on Wednesday.
All right.
I didn't say that out loud.
We will
and it's not going to be me. It's going to be somebody. And it's not going to be pretty. It's totally fake news. You can't listen to him. He's a Democrat. Democrats are terrible.
Before John comes on, we will be speaking with candidate Chris Leal, who was going to be on our Texas panel last week, but he got stuck in a debate, which is arguably much more important than our little show. So we will have him on Wednesday to meet him because Texas is getting a little progressive over there.
It is.
All the good things happen to a place when I leave it.
Leave Florida.
However, if I move somewhere, one of their professional teams will win a national championship the first year that I live somewhere. Every single time without fail. If I move somewhere within the first year, unfortunately, I can't control which sport. Which is unfortunate for my Dolphins. So, but like if I move somewhere, a team from where I live within the first year of me living there wins a national championship.
That sounds peachy.
It's a fact. It started when I went to Colorado, and that was the year they won the Orange Bowl. And it just continued from there all the way through Indiana to the Pacers. It went down to San Antonio with the Spurs. I'm telling you, even Northwestern, which is like not the sports school, made it to the Rose Bowl the year I was there. I'm just saying, it's a thing.
I need a haircut.
So, it's all about your hair.
Yeah, that's what it's about. That's what it's about. This was a really great show tonight. I think we had a great conversation.
I think you need to go to a stylist and stop going to a barber.
Yeah, I think I got it.
I think you need to go get yourself like not a little boy haircut. You need to go get like a man haircut at a stylist. I picture you when you go to the barber, you sitting in one of those like things that look like a car, but it's not really a car, like on the horse.
Race car.
Did they like a kids cuts? Kids cuts. Is that like what you do?
I don't do a kids cut.
You don't do kids cuts?
But I unfortunately have a very bad cowlick, and dealing with that is not easy.
You have a lot of issues, man.
We will eventually find out what happened with Mr. Shipton. I'm sure that it may have been a miscommunication on time. But
yeah, I do. We'll get him back on.
We'll figure it
out. I had reached out to Gabriel, and he's really kind of swamped right now. But what's most important is I really want to figure out where to watch the film. Guys, the film is called Ithaca with a K, and it has to do with the past two-year battle that John Shipton has been dealing with, and Stella Morris, who's Julian Assange's partner, and the case that's been like lingering forever with like no end in sight, but there is an end in sight.
We hope.
Yes. We hope. But I don't know where to watch it. I keep looking it up. And they're crowdfunding too. So I want to support. That's part of why I wanted to have him on.
With that said, we will get it figured out, and we appreciate you guys.
We appreciate
all the wonderful support this evening. It looks like it's been great. Jen has got to hit the bong, and I got to get some food. Appreciate you all. And don't forget, on Wednesday night, very, very important, we're going to do a little plug before we go. The esteemed Alternaview panel of Marianne Williamson, Katie Halper, Crystal Ball, Brianna Joy Gray, and Juliana Forlano. You can shake your head all you want. This is important.
It's very important.
A slew of non-corporate candidates are going to be part of this panel that are going to be interviewed and are going to get a lot of exposure. So we're hoping for them to get that exposure between 7 and 8 p.m. So that way at 8 p.m., you come and join our podcast.
And I don't think anybody on that end would be promoting our show.
But that's okay.
But that's okay, because we're better than that.
Good night, guys.
Thanks for watching. If you want to support our mission to transform politics into service, please like this video, subscribe, follow us on social media, and consider joining our Patreon, where you'll get early access to our interviews as well as other exclusive content. Links are in the description. Peace out.